everyone, episode 60 of Our Brooklyn Bites. It's December. I'm Stephanie.
I'm Leon.
So Leon, how did your Thanksgiving go?
Pretty good. Good? Not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quiet, small. Small gathering with the family.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing special. No big party or anything like that.
No.
How about yours?
Yeah, same. Pretty much the same. Small.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I did some, what do you call it? Like shopping. Black Friday. It's not, is it even called Black Friday shopping anymore? Because it starts on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So I do like online, I should say. I don't go to stores.
Or even earlier in some cases.
Mm-hmm. So I spent a balance of my time doing that and also with the family. So we'll talk about some of my purchases later. But did you find any time to play any games this week?
It was tough. It was challenging because of, you know, the holidays and you know, time away from the usual gaming that I would like to, engage in. Uh-huh. And of course the online shopping and all that stuff. So
yeah, it is tricky.
So, and Rocket League, I should say, because that
still playing it.
Because it's very easy to just pick up Rocket League, play for half an hour here and there.
That half an hour goes quick.
It does. I feel like three or four matches gives me a good feel. I mean, like, it, you know, like I can get in, I can play a few rounds and I can step away. I don't have to like, I don't have to binge on it too much, but it does fill those gaps very easily, like where you can just pop on for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. I almost wish that game was on my iPad because it's the type of game that I just want to like put on for a quick game. Like, cause the games are like 5 minutes usually, not even. And, to load up turn on my PlayStation, turn on the TV, change the channel and, you know, change the AV switcher and all that stuff. It's like, by the time I do that, it's like, all right, any updates that I have to download and things like that.
You need a universal remote, one button, and then it just does all that for you.
Do they make that?
Sure.
Really?
They do.
Oh.
Not the updates part, but everything else.
The gears are turning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, so because of all this, I needed a short game to sort of tackle this week. And I looked at the list of TurboGrafx games that I hadn't played. And on that list was a game called Silent Debuggers. Have you heard of this title?
Wait, what is this for?
TurboGrafx. Mm-hmm.
Silent Debuggers. This was an American release?
It was.
No, I have never heard of this.
This was released in 1991 by NEC.
Okay.
And it was developed by Data East. And, it did
makers are Vigilante.
Among other things.
They had that and I think R-Type, right? Was that them at the time or IRM still had that?
That's a good question.
I forget who released that, but yeah, they had, well, the thing was, there wasn't that many third-party games on the TurboGrafx.
Not initially, but a lot of them were published directly by NEC, like they licensed it.
They licensed it through them, kind of like how Capcom did their Sega.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this is sort of, I don't know, it's hard to describe the game. I mean, I didn't know what to expect from it. I knew it was a game that was just in my pile, and I hadn't spent any time in it. And I thought, let me give this game a shot. And it looks like some kind of sci-fi adventure. And you get a nice little intro in the beginning. You're told, you know, it's the future, and there was this war on Earth, and, you know, mankind has pushed into space, and there's a space station that's been, I guess, abandoned or something. Something happened on this space station.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really know what.
It sounds like that other game you played.
Which other
not
one?
Not too long ago, that ghost game.
Oh, maybe.
Echo Knight or something like
that,
right?
Yeah, well, okay, I could see some parallels, perhaps. At least in the setup.
Okay.
But basically, you're a member of this team called the Debuggers, and you're being called in. Now, the name Silent Debuggers, this has nothing to do with computer programming. Mm-hmm. You're not...
That's what I immediately thought, yeah.
Yeah, you're not, like, you know...
It's like a spy game, like you're anonymous or something.
No, nothing like that.
Okay.
Although there is... You could maybe guess that there's something to do with that. But I'm going to assume the title is because, I guess in this world, debugging is like, I guess, removing a threat, perhaps, or... Like if something is bugged, it's bad, and then you debug it to get it back to normal, kind of a thing. I don't know. Maybe that's... I'm just trying to decipher the title and why they went with this name. But the team is called the debuggers. They're basically mercenaries. They're described as people who will take any job for the reward. And you're introduced to one of the characters whose name is Leon. He says, "Be my buddy."
Is that pre-programmed as Leon, or did you name it Leon?
No, oh, okay. I don't put my own name into the game. yeah, and basically, you know, I mean, that's pretty much what he says. He says, like, you know, he introduces himself, and he, you know, explains that debuggers do all the dirty work, and that's why they're in it. They want to, you know, they love adventure and danger and so on. And you're headed for the space station, and the space station is called Ome, something like that. O-H-M-E is the name of the station. I don't know what that means. But, you know, for some reason, some aliens have invaded this station, and we're there to sort of, we need to clean the place out. We need to, like, get rid of the infestation. So you're told the station has, you know, it's about half a mile long. It has 5 floors. And you have, you know, you dock with the station, you go on board. And you're also told that, you know, there were people that went there before, and they never came back. No one ever came back from this place. Mm-hmm. They weren't heard from again. So you don't know what happened here. Now, the funny thing is, you know, like, I just wonder, like, what is it with Japanese games and putting characters named Leon into their games? Because it seems like that's happened more than a few times.
Right. Like, I'm thinking of at least 3 games right now.
Mm-hmm. And there's a few. And I just wonder if it has something to do with Blade Runner, because there is one of the replicants in Blade Runner was named Leon McNichol. Or no, I'm sorry, Leon Kowalski was the character in Blade Runner. Leon McNichol was in the anime series called Bubblegum Crisis. I don't know if you've ever heard of this one.
I've heard of that one.
And that one's kind of a cyberpunk mecha, like near future kind of a story as well. And that's also heavily influenced by Blade Runner. You could see it in all the designs and all the concepts in that show as well. So yeah, this seems to be a recurring thing. So you're brought onto this station, and you can select from normal or hard difficulty, which I end up finding is ridiculous, because the game is plenty hard on its own, just at normal difficulty.
Really? Okay.
You know, you go in, and basically the presentation is almost like a first-person shooter, kind of a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really have too much freedom of movement. It's a pretty much static screens for the most part, and you just change your viewpoint like 90 degrees at a time. So it's almost like an old-style dungeon crawler, you know? And, you know, you have a quick encounter with an alien, which your partner, Leon, in the game refers to as a fat baboon. Mm. I don't know why he even thought that, because these things don't look ape-like at all. They do kind of look like bugs, you know, a little bit. But he tells you to go clear them out as he accesses the central computer to try to, you know, get control of the station. And initially, you get a choice of 2 different weapons. He gives you a choice of 2 out of 6 weapons that you can pick from. And the weapons are two different categories, assault rifles and launchers. And some of them use what's called live ammo, which is a limited supply of ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them use your batteries, your suit. You wear a suit that's powered, and you have a battery supply. And some of the weapons use power from the batteries, as opposed to just like a fixed amount of ammunition. These weapons have names like motor cannon, grenade launcher, mega beamer, sonic launcher, lip shoot,
okay,
yeah, or sleep launcher.
What is that?
They do a variety of different things. Okay. They all have a different kind of, like, effects on the enemies. Some are more effective than others. Depends.
Okay.
Yeah. now, there's the way the game is structured, there's a core in the station, and in the center of the core is where the computer control room is. And all around that is a set of 8 blocks. Right, and some of these blocks have specific control rooms in them that do different things, such as refilling your battery supply, reloading your ammunition, and then other rooms that control aspects of the station. And
So it's not a point-and-click game, though, right?
Not at all, no.
Because it look from this, the pictures I'm seeing online, it looks like... It looks sort of like a first-person point-and-click view sort mm-hmm. of thing.
It is first-person view.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's not like Doom where you can like look around.
It's not that either.
And examine things.
Okay.
You can only basically turn your viewpoint like 90 degrees at a time. You can look left, so your whole view shifts left. You know, that kind of a thing. So, like I said, there's like there's a room where you can go and get your battery recharged, right? But in that room... It tells you, like when you encounter it, it says, like, oh, this is Gain's battery room. And Gain is the name of the station in the Japanese version of the game, like, from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. So it's weird that in the intro you're told the station is called Ome, but then there's also references to Gain in the game.
So was it just sloppy and they never changed it?
I think so, because the manual also refers to both.
Oh.
In one place, it'll say Ome, and then in another place, it'll say Gain, which there's no rhyme or reason.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the original name, and then why they changed it to the other name, but then they didn't do a complete job of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just sloppy translation, which is, you know,
no,
not surprising. Some of the other rooms have what's called sensor control or lighting control. And basically, the sensor control, like your suit that you wear, has like sonic sensors that can sense where the enemy is, right? So as you're walking along through the corridors, you'll hear like a pulsing tone. And as you're getting closer to the enemy or an enemy that's somewhere on the station, it'll start to pulse and it'll start getting higher pitched as you're getting closer. So that's kind of how you kind of find the enemies in this game. You sort of listen to the tones that your suit's making and you kind of follow the direction of the sound to try to locate them. So like I said, there's a central core with these like sections around it. And typically the enemy is in an area outside of that circular area. So if you bring up the map, you see like kind of a circular arrangement in the middle. But then outside of that are just arrangements of different rooms that you can go into. And usually it's some kind of grid pattern. And what happens is, you know, once you clear out all the enemies that are out there, you basically get called back to the central control center where your partner is. He's been trying to hack into the computer system.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll tell you some things about the story and what he's uncovered. He might find like a video log of the crew and explaining like a little bit of what's going on. And as you progress, you get little bits of the story like that.
It's not a CD game, right? It's a Hue card?
It is a Hue card game, yeah.
So there's no video or anything? Okay.
No, it's just, you know, static. It's mostly like just simple game graphics.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this game could have very easily have been like an FMV game. It's that limited in terms of your level of control over what you see.
Yeah.
You know, so very easily, like, all of these things that I'm encountering in the game could have easily have been replaced by clips that just play back. So that probably would have been a good candidate if they wanted to go in that direction. Now, the enemies that you encounter they do look sort of like bugs. You can tell them apart by different colors. And some have different patterns of movement. So in other words, like you might encounter the green one, which tends to run away from you when you're near it, and you have to chase it. So it's annoying because you have to move and try to fire at the same time because it's constantly running away from you. Others are more direct. They'll come towards you and confront you directly. Now, the thing with the batteries is weird because the batteries are almost like it's both your ammunition for the weapons that use that, and it's also your health. So you have two batteries, and you have bars on the screen that show you how much power you have in each one. And as you fire your weapon that uses your battery power, you see that bar starting to shrink. And as you take damage from enemies, the same thing also happens. Now, if your battery power goes to zero, you basically are considered killed. But what you can do is you can switch to the other battery. So you have to actually watch your battery and then switch to the other one, and that'll let you continue for a little while longer.
Mm-hmm.
But if either one of them are too, you know, or if both of them are too short, you have to retreat back to the core, find that battery room, and recharge your batteries.
Wow. Is this a lot of backtracking? Is it quick?
It's pretty fast if you know where you're going. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, there's what they call like a quick map on the screen. But it doesn't really show you the layout of the room. It just sort of shows you your position relative to like the general layout. You just have a rough idea. You have to pause the game and go into like a select screen to see the full map, which is a little annoying. It's not that easy. There's like a whole information screen where you can select like which weapon you're using and you know, which battery you're using, and it shows you like just general information.
Did you find yourself using the lip weapon often?
I didn't pick that one from the start.
Okay.
So I never got around to seeing what that's like. But I mean, you know, after clearing the first wave of monsters, I'm told that like the computer's been hacked, you know, like to get back
always
to
hackers, even in the future.
Well, maybe that's where the debugging part of this title comes into play too, where basically they had to break into the computer system of this station to figure out what's going on. But basically the computer announces that the station is on lockdown and that the self-explosion program has been activated. And we have 100 minutes to get to level 6.
Bad. Yeah. Level right. 6. Okay.
Level 6 is where the computer core is, where you can deactivate the self-destruct. Because the station because the computer's been breached, the computer has decided to self-destruct for some reason. And so that's why you have to get down to all those levels to turn it off. And
usually the computers are smart in the future. This is the one time where we could use a smart computer to say, no, I don't want to self-destruct.
Right, you got to convince it to not blow up, I guess. If that's possible. You know, there's other things that are in the menu that I didn't get to try out. There's something called a jump command, and it requires something called a jump unit, which I think what it does is it lets you retreat quickly back to a certain location. I think that's what that's for.
Sort of like a teleport.
Maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other complication from this game is that, you know, the monsters aren't limited to just those cargo areas. And each level, the layout is a little different. But what they can do is they can invade the core, that central core area. And if they do get into that core, the computer detects the invasion and says, I'm going to have to shut down that area because it's being invaded. And that's bad, because if you're in the section, when it gets shut down, it's game over.
Oh, wow.
If you chase the monster out, you can avert that area getting shut down, but the percentage is retained. So if the monster stays in there long enough, an area can be like 50% shut down before it's cut off. And that value will stay there, so that if it gets invaded again in a subsequent
level, you're going to have less.
You're going to have less and less until you lose access to that area. Now, if you lose access to the area where like the lights are controlled, then that's it. It's lights out in the game, and it's completely dark, and you can't see anything.
Wow, that's tough.
So you would have to pretty much guide by either the sound of your sensors or just make reference to the map. It would be really tough, because the map's not even on the screen all the time. You know, the same goes for like the battery room. Like if the section that contains the battery room is shut down, you won't be able to refill your battery anymore. And that's bad, because you won't have
it's pretty much game over at that point.
Little by little. Uh-huh. Yeah. There is a device. I think later, if you survive to a certain level, there's a device that you will get that will refill your battery for you. But I didn't get that far, because the game is pretty tough.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe a little bit of trial and error, probably, in the beginning, until you figure out, like, is it a predictable pattern? Like, are the guys always, sort of like Night Trap, where, like, the enemies are always in the room at a certain time?
Not really that I found. Okay. I don't think so. I mean, so you have this central area that you basically have to protect from invasion, and then you have this outer area where you have to knock out however many monsters there are there.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you are fighting monsters in the outer area and the inner core gets invaded, you want to drop what you're doing, get to that area before the shutdown occurs. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'll lose access to that area. So, obviously, if all of those areas are shut down, then that's it. That's game over also. You want to prevent that from happening. Not to mention, you also have the timer. You have 110 minutes to complete, and that timer is always on the screen. So
Is that in real time?
I think it's real time.
Okay.
And actually, every time you die, you lose 5 minutes.
Hmm.
So if your batteries run out or you get killed by the monsters, then you get teleported back to the center, you get revived, and you're told, you know, you've lost 5 minutes. Get back out there and, you know, try to stop what's going on.
Okay.
You know, so I think there's I'd say the good thing about the game is there is a good use of stereo sound to, mm-hmm. like, kind of indicate the direction of the enemy. Overall, like, there's pretty good music when there is music. Like, the intro has a cool theme, and the little cutscenes that you get in between levels is pretty neat. But there's nothing during gameplay, and I think that's intentional to sort of create this isolation feeling, and also just to not get in the way of those sonic sensors that you have, because you do rely on those during the game, you know? So, like I said, I wouldn't call this a first-person shooter at all, even though it kind of looks like one, because there really isn't any aiming. You know, like, if you encounter a monster, you just press the fire button and it hits it.
Oh, okay.
You know, you don't have to, like, aim your shot or anything.
I was thinking you had to aim.
Okay. Yeah, it's like, if it's in front of you and you shoot, you'll
just
hit
it. Just press
it. Uh-huh. But it depends, because they move in a different pattern. So mm-hmm. sometimes an enemy will move back and forth. Like, it'll be in front of you, but it'll duck in behind the corner, and then it'll pop out again. Some of them come right for you. You know, it depends on which one you run into. And then some of them are tougher than others. They'll take more damage, or, you know, they mm-hmm. have more health or something like that. So overall, I'd say it's more like kind of like a survival horror game, but in like a sci-fi, like dungeon crawler format, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think I died at the end of level 3. So I think,
was it like 90 levels?
No, there's like 6. Oh, really? Okay. Well, there's like a starter level, and then there's 5 more levels.
Uh-huh.
And you see a map of the station. As you clear the level, you'll see like the core actually drops physically. It moves through the station. And you go to the next level, and then you'll see like the outer area will be arranged differently in different patterns. So I'd say it's pretty hard, because it's almost like any damage you take as you play the game, you can't recover from it. Because as those sections get shut down, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a bigger problem than the time limit, really. So I don't know. I don't think I'm going to be trying this again. It's a little too rough.
Yeah, and that was on normal you played?
And that was on normal difficulty. Hmm. So I don't even know what hard difficulty leads to.
Huh.
Yeah.
So.
I was going to just basically not recommend this game very much.
Okay. No, that's good. I was going to say, if someone had, you know, $20 in their pocket,
mm-hmm.
is this a game you would recommend?
Do
you know, is this, because I never heard of this game, is this like sort of a desirable game because of its rarity, or is it pretty common and I just don't remember it?
I don't think so. I didn't actually check on the value of it, but okay. It seems like a pretty common game to me.
Oh, all right.
I didn't
really own at the time TurboGrafx, so.
Yeah, it was on Wii Virtual Console for a while, but then it got delisted. It got pulled sometime after it was released.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure why that happened.
The hackers did it.
Maybe.
The silent debuggers didn't work hard enough.
Uh-huh. Right. They decided that, you know, they're going to move on to more dangerous things.
Yeah.
Because that's what they like.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, not very rewarding, but...
So, you sort of regret it, but...
Well...
At the same time, it's another one you cross off your list.
Exactly. That's how I look at it.
And probably won't go back to it, so... Mm-hmm. All right.
How about you? Anything interesting?
Well, like you said, you know, we were a little tough on time, so I chose a mobile game. I went with Lara Croft Go.
Mm.
Now, this is based on the Tomb Raider series, of course.
Right.
The famous Lara Croft that everyone loves, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She just had a new game that came out. This is the mobile version of this game. It has nothing to do with any of the full versions on, you know, the 3D versions on the computers and consoles. This one is from Square Enix, though. The Montreal studio made this one. It's on Android, iOS, and Windows, believe mm-hmm. it or not. I don't know how that works in Windows, but I think they're starting to have their own little ecosystem there
mm-hmm.
on Windows 10. This is a turn-based puzzle game with an isometric view. If anyone has played Hitman Go,
right.
It is the based on that style of game.
Mm-hmm.
It has that isometric board game look to it.
Yeah, it kind of did remind me of that.
A little, like, polygonish. It's not super, like, you know, CGI rendered looking.
Mm-hmm.
But it has a nice look to it. There's 6 stages with 50 levels, approximately, total. They just added those extra stages. So it was originally 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then, just coincidentally, this week as I was playing, there was an update to it, and they added another stage. So, and it gets pretty hard, the last stage that they added. So the levels are single screen, and the way you play this game is you're on like a sort of a track.
Mm-hmm.
And the track connects the player with the exit, but it's not always, this track doesn't always, like, it's not in a straight line. It's sort of like a grid sort of pattern that's, like, broken up, and, yeah, you know, it's not always, like, point A to point B. But it's basically a path that Lara is allowed to move in, sort of like, I just think about like a game board sort of thing, where you can move one square at a time.
Mm-hmm.
There's little circles on these tracks which indicate which space you can occupy when you swipe the screen to move the character. So when you move, it's like turn-based. So actions happen when you take a turn. So like nothing happens on the screen. When you move, then everyone else moves too. And they take their turn, and then you take your turn, and then everyone takes their turn. But it's all like done quickly because you're swiping, mm-hmm, you know, quick. One of my complaints about it is because of this turn-based sort of movement. If you want to play this game sort of quick, like I was kind of doing it, there is a little bit of lag where I'll swipe 4 times, and by the time I get to the 4th swipe, it's still on like 2 turns behind,
mm-hmm,
and I have to wait for the animations to play through. And sometimes I go a little too fast, and I don't predict the enemy patterns correctly,
mm-hmm,
and I die, or that, or I just swipe too much, and it's like, I really meant to swipe 3 times, not 4 times. So that whole lag thing sort of bothered me a little bit, but that's a minor issue.
Mm-hmm.
You can swipe in 4 directions as long as there's a track for your character to move in. The game starts out really simple. It's a single stage. And every level you go through, they add, like, a new enemy. So the first enemy you'll encounter are cobras. And these cobras are red, and that color does matter, because later on, different colors, enemies mean something different.
Hmm.
But the red cobra is static, doesn't move, doesn't do anything. If you land on the square in front of it, the cobra will jump out and hit you, and you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
There's no life meter, nothing. It's instant kill. So what you want to do for, like, a character like this is you would move your character on the left side of it or right side or behind it. And then when you approach it in that direction, it can't hit you because it's facing forward.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it won't be able to... That cobra doesn't move. He just stands. Think of it as, like, the snake in Pitfall. It just stays there.
Right.
You can jump over it whenever you want, but in this game, there's no jumping. So you go next to it, and then when you charge it, you can shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you charge into it, she automatically pulls a gun down and kills it. The placement of the cobras in the paths, it's done in a way where it'll block, like, you might see point A and point B to be a straight line, but there could be cobras placed in a way where if you shoot that cobra in front of you, you'll land on a spot where there's another cobra, like, in the next square over. Mm-hmm. Sort of like in the game of chess.
Yeah.
Where, like, it'll be, like, kind of checkmate. If you jump into it, you're going to die.
So you have to do plan.
It's all planning. So you got to plan, like, your routes and how you're going to move your character around.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, the cobras are easy, but really you have, like, one level of that where it's that easy, where it's so simple to figure out, but mm-hmm, it doesn't get, it pretty much ends almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
The next enemy you counter would be lizards. So this is where it gets a little bit trickier. The lizards, you now can only be within 2 circles of spaces of a lizard.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you cross its path, it will wake up. It's like kind of sleeping, dormant.
Uh-huh.
And then as soon as you cross it, it like jumps up and it sees you. And then it starts following you.
Mm.
It'll follow you in the exact movements you do. So if you move like in an S pattern of movements, like I move up, up, left, left, up, up, mm, it'll also move up, up, left, left, up, up.
Oh.
So it follows you. Nice. So every time you take a turn, it takes a turn and it keeps doing that. So that is important because you will use this to your advantage when there's some stages will have these like weighted blocks that you have to stand on. And when you stand on a weighted block, it'll maybe open up the door for you, like in like a pulley system sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or like if you ever play like Zelda, how like, you know, you want to move certain things, like weighted things to push like the floor, a piece on the floor, and that'll like move a brick for you or something. You know, like that sort of cause and reaction. So you have to sort of plan your movement so like you're near the door when the lizard crosses over, you know, that weighted thing, and that sort of or if you want to kill the lizard, you'd have to make him sort of jump over, fall over like a pathway where that's going to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit of strategies like that. But what they do is they layer on the enemies. So now you have like lizards, and then they'll add the cobras again. So now you have two enemies to deal with at the same time. And then they keep building on that.
Mm-hmm.
So like other enemies you get are tarantulas. You get different color enemies, which are, you can kill them, but they reform after four moves.
This was
in the last update. So you kill the cobra, and you have four spaces where it stays dead, and then it reforms again. Sort of like the skeletons in Castlevania. You know, they stay kind of dead for a little bit, and they kind of just form back
and the
again.
The bones just pull back together.
Yeah, exactly.
So wait, this is just the tarantulas that do this?
No, this is all the enemies. So, like, in addition to all the enemies, you have golden versions of these enemies,
they
do that. But only on the last level does this happen.
So it's a level thing.
This was a recent update, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You have... and there's also, I think, red cobras, which... I think the red cobras, I forget if they move or something also. You get saw blades, which are usually running on a track in a similar way your character moves on a track.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll run like in a very predictable pattern. You just have to plan your movements that you don't run into a saw blade, you know, in the same spot that's on. There's booby traps, and then you do fight a boss, which is a giant dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on the state end of level 5, I believe.
It's actually a dragon?
Yeah, it's a giant dragon. It takes up the whole screen.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so even though it's not really like a, you know, it's a puzzle game, but the puzzles are done in a way where you can still fight a dragon, and I don't want to spoil too much, but you kind of use the booby traps against the enemy, and that's how you kill it.
Okay. I was going to ask, are they mostly like, you know, natural type of enemies, like wildlife, animals and stuff?
Yeah, well, that's pretty much all the enemies. It's the cobras, the tarantula, and the lizards in different colors.
Mm-hmm.
And then the booby traps, and then the giant dragon, which is, like, a huge character.
All right, so there's no, like, humans or other enemy characters to interact with?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay, it's just you versus the environment,
not even
basically.
Any dialogue in it, no. You're just thrown into it,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of know she's after treasure.
Right.
In the beginning, you'll see that she wants the treasure, but there's a door in the way, and you have to kind of unlock, you know, the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you unlock the doors, by doing each level, and you get, like, a little key to open up the door. And every time you get a key, it opens up another latch, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I was saying, most of the levels, to get to the exit, you always, as soon as you start the level, you see the exit right away. It's just getting there is the tricky part.
Mm-hmm.
So, the puzzle aspect to this, in addition to fighting all the enemies... there's these weighted platforms which activates different things on the level, and they're color coordinated. Stone pillars that you can push around.
Mm-hmm.
There's floors that give way. Some of them, like, you step on it once and it breaks, and then the second time, well, it'll crack the first time, and the second time it breaks,
mm-hmm.
and then you can't fall in, and otherwise you die. So these, like, multi movement sort of things that had, they're not always immediate sort of reactions when you step on them.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a lot of strategy and planning ahead. You'll find that like a game of chess or something, you're thinking, and so if you don't like this type of game, I don't know if this probably not be some for you, but you have to kind of really think like four moves ahead usually all the time. If you just go like square by square by square, you'll be, in the beginning, like, that's usually how I play, but you'll find yourself dying a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But you definitely have to kind of do the math in your head, like, okay, I'm going to move this square, this guy's going to go here, this is going to happen here, this is going to happen here. And you got to think in your head, if I move that way again, this is going to have, like, this boulder's going to move this way, this thing's going to, like, move that way, this pillar's going to move, you know, or drop here, and, like, it's sort of this.
This almost sounds like that Mousetrap board game, you know, where
one
thing triggers another, and kind of leads to the, you know, kind of the outcome you want.
It gets really tricky. There's times where I wish I had, like, an undo feature. I was like, no, I didn't want to move up, I wanted to go left, and you have to, like, start, from the beginning, and eventually, like, there's some levels where you do it so many times that it's just like, okay, I know it's up, up, left, left, up, up, left, left. And then you have to, like, back, and then up, and then you have to just remember, like, that's all preset movements. And that's what the game's about.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting to that exit, and then eventually at the end of each level, you get that trophy.
Right.
And, or the key in the beginning, and that opens up the next level. There are in-app purchases, but fortunately, they have nothing to do with the game. It's all eye candy, so you can unlock outfits for Lara Croft.
I see.
Because I know everyone wants that, right? they give you some... They give you... Well, so... You can unlock the special outfits, but there's free outfits you can unlock, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, on every stage, there are hidden, like, pottery... Like, pots that you can break. Now, these pots have... relics in them. So if you play the recent Tomb Raider game and you collect the relics, you collect a piece of the relic. So you'll see like a little pottery thing. If you just tap it, it breaks it. And then it'll say like, you found one piece of 10 of this relic.
Mm.
And every stage you have to find that pot to break. And then unlocks the next piece. If you collect like all 10, then you'll get, you know, the hidden outfit, you know, unlock one of them.
Okay.
And then there's also like gems you can find too. And if you collect like the 10 gems for the level, you get another outfit.
I like little secondary objectives like that.
Yeah, yeah, and that's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And they're in the beginning, they're pretty easy to find, but later on, as you move your character, because it is sort of 3D, so as you move your character, the angle will just slightly change and reveal like a pot behind like a stone pillar,
mm-hmm.
or in a corner behind something, or in like a waterfall or something. You just have to tap your finger and you grab it.
As long as you see it. You don't have to be, like, near it or anything.
No, but it's another distraction, because you're trying to pay attention to all the other, mm-hmm. like, memorizations of the movements, and also remember to have to, like, look for those hidden pots on the board.
Right, right.
So, I like the game. I thought it was really good. I like puzzle games. I typically don't like games where I need to, like, have strategies and remember things and plan out moves in advance, and I gotta admit, especially on, like, stage 4 and 5... It was really hard. I thought it was really difficult. And there were times where I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I put it down. I'm like, this game is like driving me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked it enough where I went back to it. And then I ended up doing it. It took a couple of tries. But it took me about somewhere between 3 to 5 hours, I think, to beat all of them. Okay. The levels.
That's pretty decent for a mobile game.
Yeah, I picked up the game cheap. It was like $1.99 on sale. Mm-hmm. I think it's normally like $5 maybe. But it was a total steal. I thought it was a great game. Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. It was good.
Okay, good.
But if you like Tomb Raider on the consoles, it's nothing like that at all.
Uh-huh, right.
Don't get your hopes up. It's a totally different game. It's 100% puzzle, turn-based, and it uses the elements of Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard good things about the game. I mean,
it's been getting some good press. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so worth checking out.
I think so, yeah.
All right, great. Another one for the pile.
Yes, that pile. So, yeah, so that was the only game I had time for this week.
Okay, yeah, so...
So, like we were saying, I did have time for shopping
for
online.
Shopping, of course.
So, I know I haven't had anything in a few weeks, but I do have some pickups for this week. Not a lot, but I gotta say, I didn't really see a whole lot online that was like gotta have or spectacular deals. But I did find this. I wasn't planning for this, but there's the... This is gonna sound pathetic again. A Mario Amiibo. I know, just when I thought I was done with these...
Why are you apologizing for your Amiibo?
Dumb Amiibo things.
For your Amiibo purchases.
So I ended up getting another one.
Mm-hmm.
This one is the... It's actually the Japanese version of Mario.
Okay.
They made two versions of the Mario. One is based on Super Mario Brothers 1 on Nintendo.
Right.
And that's like sort of the red and orange outfit. And then they made the blue and red Mario, which is based on like... the N64 game, or the original Donkey Kong, like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the Japanese one is the blue and red one, and that was only released previously in a bundle with the deck in America.
Uh-huh.
That was the only way you can get it.
Right, I remember that.
So, and I almost, like, bought the deck just for that.
I think that bundle was...
I was waiting for a sale, but...
That bundle was Walmart exclusive?
It was Walmart exclusive.
Yeah.
So they... Somehow, I guess maybe they have a lot of them or something, but they released it as a standalone Walmart exclusive still.
Mm-hmm.
But you can now buy it as a standalone, and I just got lucky, and I found it online.
Right.
I ordered it, and I missed it. It was in my cart, and then when I went to check out, it said, sorry, this cart's empty, and I was like, no, screaming.
Always happens.
So I waited like an hour or two, and then I checked Walmart again, and they had them in stock again, and then I put it in the cart, and then it turns out that the store didn't have it in stock after all, and they were shipping it to the store.
Hmm.
And then it so happened that I was in another Walmart this past weekend.
Right.
And, they just happened to be putting them on the shelves at the same time. So I just bought that one, and then I'll worry about the one I ordered if it ever, I did store pickup. So they're unreliable. Who knows if the store will ever get it, or if it does, I'll just cancel the order or whatever.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I picked that one up, and, the other game I picked up was Talos Principle.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is a puzzle game for PS4. It's on Steam also. But it was on at Best Buy. It was $29.99, right?
This week for, yeah.
And then it was sale. A Gamers Club Unlock thing. It was like $25 around.
Right.
So I thought it was a good deal. It's another puzzle game. You know I like puzzle games. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it looks good.
And that's pretty much it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I picked up a few things too.
Only a few.
I'm still waiting for certain other things to show up.
Okay.
So I'll just mention the ones I have already. And the first thing was, I finally got one of those PSTV bundles that I've been holding out for. I don't know if that's like a huge thing, but you know, the PlayStation TV or the Vita TV, however.
You're one of those people that actually wanted one.
I have a Vita. I have Vita games. So I get free Vita games as part of PS Plus every month. So why not have the option to play it on the TV as well?
Listen, they were cheap enough when they came out. I bought one. I bought it for the controller alone. It was a great bundle deal. It was like, I think I paid $40 for mine with the controller, the game, and a memory card, and the machine.
Right. So that's the bundle I got as well.
And okay. Oh,
so
okay.
It's the unit with an 8 gig memory card, which is not much. It's the smallest one they make, but it's enough to get you started. Yeah. And, you know, again, the Lego Movie game that came with it and a DualShock 3 controller is bundled in, because normally the machine by itself doesn't come with anything. Not even a memory card.
Yeah.
Not even a
controller. I've seen deals on those for like $20.
And so those were $20 this week also. But because I already had this bundle, I didn't jump on one of those.
How much did you pay?
So I ended up paying $50 for the bundle, which is, you know, they're $99 now. When they first were released a year ago, they were $140.
I know.
So I think this was a decent enough of a break to jump in on one. You know, other things.
Yeah, unfortunately, you can't. I mean, the game is a digital code.
Right.
So it's not even like a physical copy. And on top of it, the game is not cross compatible. So it only works on the Vita, which really limits your resale value on that game.
Right. Like, it's not like if you enter that one, you'll get it for
like PS4 or something. PS4 and PS3. Yeah. Which would have been probably easier to turn that game over on eBay.
Mm hmm. Yeah. But it's fine. I mean, it gives me another game to play on that thing if I ever.
You would actually play the Lego game?
Some of them are good.
Did you see the movie?
I didn't see the movie.
Oh, okay. I don't know, it might be good. The Lego games are usually pretty good. They're just sort of like cookie cutter sort of things.
I haven't really put any time to any of them. So it just makes another one available in case I want to play one.
So,
play one.
I mean, we talked about it many episodes ago. It's not. I wasn't impressed with that thing. But like you said, it's almost worth it for what do you call it? Like PS, what's it called? PS4 streaming?
Well, it can do that too,
so
right?
So you can hook it up to another
the remote
TV
play.
In your house.
Yeah. You can do PS4
is that what they call remote play.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of worth it for that.
Right. So, like, if you have your PS4 in your living room and you want to be able to play your PS4 in your bedroom, you can put the PS TV in your bedroom
It'll
and use that.
Game. As long as you have a decent internet connection.
Yep. Yeah. So that's overall.
Know. Who knows?
It's just one of those
in
things.
In the life of the system, you in 10 years from now, or 15, you might be like, I'm so glad I bought this thing. This
I don't
is a
know.
Great idea.
I don't know about that, but it is among those things. All right. So the next thing I got was also at Best Buy. They had a buy two, get one free sale going.
Those are dangerous.
Yeah. On used games in particular.
Just used games?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
wait, this was Best Buy and not GameStop?
This was Best Buy.
Okay.
Which, you know, Best Buy does carry used games also. And as part of Gamers Club Unlock, you also get the 10% off on used games. So they give you 20% on new games.
Yeah.
Which is great. But, you know, it's pretty much on used games, you're only at 10%, which is the same as what GameStop would give you.
Uh-huh.
But I find that a lot of the Best Buy games are usually in really good shape. Unlike
their used games,
yeah. Unlike what you find in a GameStop, which is pretty hit or miss. Sometimes you can find something great. Sometimes you have nothing. You know, you have junk.
Mm-hmm.
But usually, the Best Buy stuff is pretty good. So what I did is I found a couple of the local Best Buy stores, and they had a couple of PS4 games that I was interested in getting. So
used PS4 games, yeah.
Used PS4 games, and they were all at the $20 price point, which means that buy two, get one free means they're all evenly divided. You know, I get the most value if you have all three of your games as the same price.
Right, like three $20 games, rather than like a $20, $20, and
$40. Right, so...
Because it's the highest... You pay for the two highest price games and the third
exactly,
one's free.
Okay. Exactly. So if you have two $20 games and then the third one's like $5 game, then you only saved $5.
Right,
which
yeah.
is not much fun. So the three games I got are,
let's see,
I have them three here. Your favorite series.
Oh, yeah.
So I picked up, Dynasty Warriors 8.
Great.
Complete edition. Extreme Legends version.
Of course.
This is for PS4.
Extreme.
Samurai Warriors 4.
Oh, love
also
it.
Also for PS4.
Koei, my favorite company.
And Warriors Orochi 3 Ultimate.
Oh, wonderful. Are you sure those aren't the same game? And they're just putting, like, they're trying to fool you with different covers.
So you might think that, right? But
they look exactly the same.
They look very similar.
In the front.
In many ways.
It's like, oh, it's the same character. it's Samurai Soldier Guy. And then the other game is Samurai Soldier Guy.
Sure. Yeah, well, this one's in China. This one's in Japan. And then this one is a mix of the two.
So I'm just ignorant then.
Well, so... So, you know, because of this deal, basically, instead of $20 each, they were about $13 each, if you divide the cost.
Okay.
So that's about...
good? Sounds good for a PS4 game.
For, you know, for three PS4 games that I kind of wanted to get for, you know, a little less than $40, I think that was okay. You know, not great, but decent.
If you wanted them, I don't know.
If I wanted them. Hey, you know, they have other games, too. They have older games. They have, you know, cheap PS3 games
Do they
for
have
$10.
Oh, PS3.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, okay. That looks good. I mean, I didn't even know about that sale going on, so... And I didn't know you'd be able to find PS4 games, but...
It's just whatever's
on
the shelf.
I'm not sure there's that many PS4 games I would want.
I know.
That I can find, like,
it's
three games.
It's still a bit thin. But this works online, too. If you see something on the website, a lot of times you can pick stuff out and have it shipped.
Well, those look brand new, so that's pretty cool.
They're in great shape. They're perfect.
I mean, the person probably had the same reaction I had. They opened it up and said, "What did I just do?" And they just got rid of it.
Right.
They didn't even bother playing it.
Maybe that's it. That's pretty much what I got.
That's it?
For the start of things. And we'll see what else I get
by
the time this is all done with.
Go wait for
the
that.
Dust has not settled yet.
USPS man to deliver your packages?
Perhaps.
Okay.
Yep.
Good.
So I guess we have time for a little bit of news.
Okay.
Let's check out what's happening this week.
Anything turkey related?
I don't know. Does the game Fez have a turkey in it?
No, but that's... No.
So what's this item about? This is about a new edition of the game Fez. Mm-hmm. This is an indie...
just when you thought...
Like platformer.
Fez was gone and out of the news.
Mm-hmm.
Fez 2's canceled. The programmer left the industry.
Right. Decided he's had enough.
Yeah.
But he hasn't had enough of people, you know...
Buying his game.
Buying the original game.
Uh-huh.
Because there's a new edition of this game.
Special edition, it looks like.
Right. It's $100, which I was a little surprised at.
A little pricey for a game that I think I got free on Xbox Live or something.
I have this game on something. I'm going to assume Xbox
360
also.
I own it on two consoles now.
Yeah, but this is like a really super deluxe version.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this game is very popular. It has a pretty big fan base.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a cult following because it's such a complex game.
Yeah.
And this thing seems equally complex. It's like... What would you say? Like this?
It's a hardcover book.
Is it a handmade book?
I don't know. It's
there's 500 copies of this book.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, the
each
author
one is signed and numbered.
So the author of the game designed this book.
Uh-huh.
He designed the design of this, you know, this whole package.
Phil Fish.
Right. And, yeah, only 100 made, you know, signed and numbered. In, you know, like a gold foil inlay,
yeah.
You know, slipcase and everything. Didn't say what kind of media this actually comes out on.
It doesn't, no, it doesn't. It just says download codes.
Download codes.
For the PC and OS X version.
Mm-hmm. And a copy of the soundtrack as well.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what's in the book. I mean,
it might just be 100% code and no discs or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that probably Steam codes, so I think the soundtrack's on there also.
Yeah. I don't know. This is...
You're really paying for the book.
It's an interesting collectible, I suppose. I mean, you do get
do
a copy of the
game. Do we know what's in the book, though? Is it, like, illustrations of the game, or...?
It doesn't
no,
actually
right?
describe it in that much detail.
Interesting.
But it looks nice.
I know you're into, like, special edition stuff, so I was wondering what your reaction is about this.
This
I know
seems...
you're not a big... I've never known you to be a Fez fan.
Yeah, I mean... It's in my pile, uh-huh. but I haven't played it, so I don't have any real opinion on it.
I got pretty close to the end. I never finished it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not on my top 100 list. But it's a well-made game, I gotta say. But.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I guess you gotta be a real fan.
I think
fan.
I talked about it. Was it in the old YouTube podcast?
Maybe.
I talked about it?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. $100 is a little hard for me to swallow for like a $5 game.
I know.
But if you're a super fan of this game, this seems like the right kind of thing to kind of cement your fandom.
I wonder how far people go for the love of a game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. Thinking of like my favorite game and how much I would pay for something special to go along with that game. Like, would I buy... $100 worth of Matt Mania action figures, like done in the old LJN WWF style, but with the Matt Mania guys. I would probably spend $100 on that.
Really?
I think that would do it for me. Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately. There was someone who did, because you know I like the wrestling games, NES Pro Wrestling. If you Google that, like custom pro wrestling figure or something like that, someone took the Ultimate Muscle toys. These were Ultimate Muscle was, that cartoon. It was also like little pink toys.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of action. They made an action figure line not too long ago of like these super poseable guys. And someone customized those to look like the NES Pro Wrestling game. And they look amazing. And I don't think he ever sold them. I think it was just like a one-off sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were to release that, I can see myself spending some money on that.
Hmm.
But I don't, there's not too many games I would do that with. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I notice here on the store page for this item, it does say that you do get a physical copy of the game in some form. So,
oh, okay. So,
I don't know if that means disc media or flash media or something else. But
so more than just like a piece of paper with codes on it?
Well, I don't know. It just has sort of the vague statement of hidden inside, you will find DRM-free PC and Mac versions of the game.
Okay.
So that probably means not a Steam code, but something else.
Yeah.
Hmm. Curious. But it's due to ship by the end of December, December 18th.
Really? That's...
Yeah, so pretty soon.
Quickly approaching, okay.
Mm-hmm. And this is considered a pre-sale.
It's still available or sold out?
Still available.
Oh, okay.
Right. 500 copies available. So.
Yeah.
So perhaps the chance to get one is still there.
Yeah, perhaps. Okay.
All right. So how about the next item? We mentioned remote play of the PS4.
We didn't mention that.
So now there's a new option for this.
Yes.
Coming soon.
So your PSTV just became obsolete.
Right.
Because you can now stream your PS4.
From 10 minutes ago. It is now obsolete.
So you can now stream it with any PC.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you don't need the PSTV.
They're working on it.
Oh, okay.
So it's not available yet.
Well, isn't it? All right.
But
so
it's coming soon.
Sony has said.
Sony's confirmed that they're working on official PS4.
Well, there's an unofficial way to do it.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Oh, is there?
Isn't that? I think how it started was someone had like a hack or something to do it.
Uh-huh.
And then Sony's like, no, wait, hold on. We're working on a real version of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be official.
Well, they're going to support Mac and PC.
Yeah.
That's the surprising part.
Uh-huh.
But that's...
Which is good.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, it's good for me because I have a Mac, but...
yeah. Which I guess is in response to the idea that you'll be able to remote play Xbox One on Windows.
Right.
So that was a feature that Microsoft had announced.
Yeah, it'll be neat. I don't know if it's so much for desktop because if I'm going to play, I'm probably just playing on my TV. But it's good if you have a laptop.
Right.
And you want to sit outside or if you're... got company over, you know, family or something, and you want to, like, put the kids in the bedroom, you know, right. The laptop on. I don't know.
Well, that already exists with the Vita, like we said.
Right, but who owns a Vita?
But, I mean, in other words, being able to stream your PS4 gameplay outside of your home network, even, that's supported as
true.
Well. So if you can do that now with a laptop as well, that's, mm-hmm. that takes it even a step further.
Yeah, I don't know if you still have to be on the same network or if you can be like in a hotel and you just have your PS4 yeah. on at home or something.
I think there is like a kind of a real world kind of a distance limitation.
Oh, okay.
Like the latency gets more noticeable mm-hmm. above, let's say, 200 miles. Like okay. if you're more than 200 miles away from home,
yeah.
The streaming might be...
What if it's raining? Does that affect the clouds?
The sunspots.
The clouds. Yeah.
What about, you know... Right. What about satellites passing overhead?
I don't know.
It could all happen. It could all be a factor. So that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that's nice to have. It's not something I particularly need, but, you know, it's just one of those things.
That's
now,
cool.
I guess maybe the next step will be, you know, your phone. Maybe streaming from your phone and playable.
Yeah.
Maybe if you have a Windows tablet, that'll work.
I thought, when they first announced the consoles, that was going to be a thing?
Mm-hmm.
Where you were going to be able to second screen your games on...
That's very true. That was one of the things... That was one of the kind of the vague icons that they had on the screen in the backdrop behind the presentation. They sort of had that cooking for a while.
Never happened.
So now they're ready to confirm it.
Yeah. And now we'll see if they confirm PS2 emulation... next weekend.
Right, because that PlayStation Experience event is coming around again. So yeah, I guess maybe relative to that, we can jump into feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had a comment from Greg Izzy, who talked about, who responded to our discussion of PS2 support on PS4 now,
mm-hmm.
through emulation. And he says, if PS2 emulation isn't for discs, it doesn't do much for anybody. And what do you think about that? Is that appropriate?
Well, it's appropriate for people who still held on to their game, their old PS2 mm-hmm. game. But PS2 is like two generations behind.
Right.
I mean, I think most people probably got rid of their stuff by now,
mm-hmm.
like the mainstream audience. So I think this really is only fan service. It's just for like the collector market and for people who may have held on to like one of their favorite PS2 games or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it'll still be a big deal though.
Mm-hmm.
And especially because Xbox announced their whole backwards compatibility, which, you know, is still not quite there yet
mm-hmm.
with the number of games. But I don't know. I mean, like I was saying, was if you're going to do PS2, then you got to figure PS1 is in there too. I mean, that thing runs on netbooks, like
mm-hmm.
the slow. I think that was running on like my old Mac from like 10 or 12 years ago.
Right.
It ran perfect. So, PS3 would be the one that would interest me because, especially for a lot of people who didn't pick up a PS3, there's a whole library, you know,
mm-hmm.
of some exclusives maybe. I don't know.
Right. Well,
but for me, it's interesting because I still have my PS2 game, so. There's a couple that I'd want to check out again.
Yeah, well, I mean, so basically, this was spun out of the story that, you know, there were a couple of old Star Wars games that were you know, emulated versions of the PS2 games.
Uh-huh.
That just proves that, you know, the PS4 is capable of running a software-based PS2 emulator.
And in some cases, enhances them, too.
Right. But I don't think that's... I think despite all this, it still doesn't indicate that Sony has any interest in supporting disc media or you know, like, games that you may already own.
I know.
Just,
I don't
you
think
know.
So.
I mean, I do agree with Greg in the sense that, you know, it's what people would want from a backwards compatible standpoint. Like, if you want to claim that the console is backwards compatible...
Uh-huh.
That's what you want to be able to do. You want to be able to drop in old media and it'll work.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah, but
I see.
Well, Sony wants to sell you
those
same games again.
Exactly. So I'm looking. So from Sony's perspective,
they invested a lot of money in that technology.
I think this is more like a virtual console kind of a thing, mm-hmm. where they get to sell you back. Maybe you don't own the game at all. Maybe this is your chance to play a rare game that you didn't have access to before.
I think if they were smart, I don't know how their online streaming service is going, mm-hmm. but I think it would be smart for them to say, hey, if you own any of these games in the store, pop in your disc and it's going to unlock that game for you.
Right.
I think that would be smart. It would get them people to play, just to try out the service. It'll get people to try it out, you know?
Yeah, it'll get them some traffic.
And maybe, yeah. So, I don't know. But I think even that might be a good idea. It may not be what people want, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of times what happens is that, you know, these companies will say, well, we haven't tested every last one of these games, and we don't mm-hmm. know how well it's going to work. Like, emulation is, you know, unpredictable sometimes. Things might work 70, 80, 90% of the time, but then there's always going to be something that doesn't work right, or
right.
a game that will glitch 95% into the mm-hmm. game, and then you can't finish it.
Uh-huh.
You know, something like that. So... Yeah. That's why I think they're a little reluctant to just flip a switch and make it wide open for anybody to be able to play anything.
I know.
But...
And there's a lot of licensing agreements, too, they have to work out. That's the problem Microsoft is running into.
That would be true for... Because
you can't have Rock Band work on PS4. Those songs are all licensed for...
Okay, but...
console and stuff.
I mean, if it's just an open system, they don't know what games you're playing. You know?
I don't know. I don't know how that works.
Maybe the contract goes that deep?
I don't know. You don't want to anger your third-party companies either.
I guess so. I guess they're willing to...
They're going to be like, hey, we're working on a new version of Rock Band. You guys are,
yeah.
are saying you can use your old version. I mean, that's definitely not going to happen because the instruments don't work. But, you know, pick another game that just got a re-release in like a remaster, you know? Mm-hmm. You're going to be like, hold it, you just, you know.
Right.
We were working on these remastered versions, and now you're saying you can play the old ones. It's no good.
I feel that it's on them to add value to these remasters.
Sure.
To make people want
right.
to rebuy them.
Right.
And not just, you know, strong-arm people into having to buy them.
No, I agree.
But the other point is, on PS3, the ones that were backwards compatible uh-huh. with PS2... Or even PS1, because all of them were PS1 compatible. But even with those, there was a compatibility list on Sony's website, mm-hmm. on PlayStation.com, where you could look up individual titles that you had, and it would tell you what degree of compatibility it had.
Okay.
There were some games, even PS1 games,
uh-huh.
that had some issues running on PS3s.
Wow, okay.
I even run into one. Playing Jumping Flash 2 when I last played that.
Oh, yeah.
I tried playing that on my PS3. I had the PS1 disc.
Uh-huh.
But there were weird graphical effects that were happening when I tried
now,
playing
do you
that.
Have... Which PS3 do you have? The one that has the native chip in it? Or
it does.
Software? Okay.
It does. But as far as PS1 goes,
uh-huh.
it's all hardware on every model of PS3. They never went to software emulation.
Oh, no. I didn't know that. I thought it was 100%.
I mean, they
software.
Did for the PSN downloads. Like, mm-hmm. you could buy the PS Classics
okay.
online, and that's, you know, emulated because even on PSP, that's also emulated.
Right.
But for discs, if you pop it into a PS3,
mm-hmm.
they all work. It's only PS2 where it was like...
Did they remove... Like, because I had the PS Slim, like one of the last generations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Did they remove PS1 backwards compatibility, or that
no.
was still in there?
No, that should have been in there.
Oh.
That should be there on all models.
Huh.
Yeah, it's only PS2 that they stepped away from little by little.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Xbox 360 had the same problem. There mm-hmm. were a pretty decent handful of titles that were not compatible.
Right.
On the 360 from the Xbox One. And, of course, the ones that I bought, like, I think, like, 20% of them did not work because they were not... I didn't know about this list that existed.
Yeah.
So I went on and I checked. And...
Yeah. So they usually like to just, you know, do the due diligence of
uh-huh.
certifying that the title works 100%. But what are you going to do?
In any event, I still say it's probably not going to happen, mm-hmm. but I'm hoping it does because it's good for gamers.
It's good to just be able to play these old games. You don't want to see these games disappear to history.
No, right.
So as long mm-hmm. as your current console can play a game from 20, 25 years ago.
It adds value to your new machine.
There you go. So, what do you say? Should we call it a day?
Yeah.
Probably, I know it's a short show, but that's okay because, you know.
We'll be back next week. That's why.
That's right. We'll be back for more stuff. Please reach out to us on Facebook.
Yeah.
Please reach out to us on our Gmail box.
Uh-huh.
Which is obbfeedback@gmail.com.
Gmail.com. That's right. Facebook. And everywhere else.
So we'll catch up with you next time.
Okay. See you later.